The Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
Hi, this is Lori Oliveri, and I love the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 409 of the Mickey Miles and More Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa, and with me on the show is Michelle Scribner-McLean for one. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Mike. How's it going?
It is going. I am close to 100%. I would not say I'm 100, but I'm in the 90s for sure. And hope to get back in shape and getting ready for my next race, whenever that's going to be. And hopefully no more interruptions. How about you?
Doing okay. As we record this, I am still in Florida. But the next recording, I'll be home, I think. I'm at lovely Vero Beach.
So you must have a shout out though, even though you're still in Florida.
I do have a shout out. So we're still reliving the glorious days of our Jungle Cruise Challenge. I want to give a shout out to the total number of rides for people. People kind of came in and came out. Anywhere from one ride all the way up through, I think Phil Vanderpool did 22. I think I did around 20. Some people did a little bit fewer than that. But I think these folks may have done almost every single one. And they are Jackie Cabrera and Matthew Millhauser. And they, I'll tell you, this peppy duo really kind of kept us going, because one of the things that they did, which is very, very cute, is if you have ridden this attraction before, the Jungle Cruise, you know that there's a spot where you go into a little Cambodian temple, and that's the only spot in the ride where the skipper is not speaking, doesn't really talk. So they took it upon themselves to sing a different 70s, 80s, or 90s pop song during every time we went in. And it was hysterical. It was really, really fun. So I think one of them was the a cappella part of Bohemian Rhapsody. I think, Mike, we did a Beach Boys one, didn't
we? Well, we were supposed to do Sloop John B. So Jackie and Matthew, you still owe me Sloop John B. We did couple of Billy Joel. We did
a Row, Row, Row Your Boat.
Doobie, I want to say Doobie Brothers, but Christopher Cross.
Yeah. Poor Unfortunate Souls.
Pat Benatar, yeah. You know, a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good. So anyway, when that happened, most of the skippers stayed in character, but as people said, we broke a few because some of them couldn't stop laughing as we were all singing, especially Bohemian Rhapsody. So anyway, shout out to those guys, because they really, their energy level was up the whole day. And we did this for 12 hours, so it really helped out. So, yay!
And if there would have been anyone who would have known all the words to all the songs, it would have been the other wonderful co-host of this wonderful podcast, the one, the only, Christopher Eliopoulos, who will grace us with a song from his playlist right now.
Man, I am, like, so depressed. I'm just going to use this song to tell you, you guys should have done Mbop by Hanson. That would have been fun to do there.
Gosh. Yeah, everybody would have known the words.
Yeah.
I have that on my running playlist, too.
Yeah. You I mean, do? That's a fun poppy 90s song.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Come on.
It's yeah? Not Neil Diamond, Chris. What, come on. Yeah.
What else did they sing? Give me another hit they made.
I'm not saying they had many hits. I'm just saying I've listened to that one.
That was like a
that
one.
That one is.
That's like a one half. Running. It's like a one half hit one wonder. You know.
It's still a fun song.
And speaking
it
of fun,
me up while I'm running.
Don't be a hater.
And speaking of fun, don't be a hater. Don't be a hater.
Hater.
Don't hate the hater. So what are we talking about? Well, a few episodes ago, we talked a little bit about some of the tours that you could take down to Walt Disney World. And Michelle and I talked about it, and we broke the bank, and we decided to take a plunge and go to one of the tours so that we could report on the tour on one of the podcasts and maybe help some of you who are on the fence to determine whether or not this particular tour would be for you. So the name of the tour that we went on was Backstage Magic, and we did it a few days before the Jungle Cruise Challenge, and we spent between 6 and 7 hours walking and riding all over Walt Disney World, and we're here to report on a few of the things that we saw and learned, and hopefully we'll help you make your mind up. So, Michelle, should we start with what it cost, or do you want to talk about exactly how it all began?
How about we talk about how to sign up for it?
All right.
So the way that I signed up for it is I called 407 WDW Tours, and actually got a little bit of a runaround, but then I called the Disney Vacation Club, and they were able to help me. So you don't have to be a Disney Vacation Club member, but you do get a little bit of a discount, not much, but it costs between $255 and $269, and
per person.
It starts at about 8:30, and we went just till about 3:30. And that includes lunch, and that includes a luxury bus, kind of like the bus that you take if you're going on a Disney cruise. Chris, you wouldn't know that, but it is a nice bus. It includes water, they give you ponchos if it rains, and you get a little bit of a discount, $255 if you're DVC. And it is not for everybody. It is for tweens, teens, and adults. So, Mike, would you recommend a cutoff? I think that I'm not sure what age this would be, the lower end of the age is for this. What would you say?
I would say 18, because there are some very hard and fast rules that have to be followed, and I would think that the older the teen, the more apt that teen would be towards abiding by the rules. We saw some rules being broken, and we'll talk about that later, but I think that 18, if you're 18 and still a geek enough to want to see this, then I think you're going to be really careful about making sure that you pay attention to all the rules that you're under when you take this tour. So my guess is 18. I don't think my own children, I don't think I would have taken them on this unless they were at least 18.
No, I think Chris's kids and my younger son are the same age. I think they would have all love it. And really think, and they're 17, but I think they could have handled it. I can't speak for your kids, Chris. I'm sure they could have handled it at 15 or 14. But it's a long day. It's a long day. The youngest person we had on our trip was starting college. So.
Okay.
But anyway, I would call in advance, as soon as you know, it runs weekdays. It doesn't run weekends. And there were some days that were filled up. But the person who did our tour, whose name is Janessa, does all the tours as of right now. We'll talk about it. She was really good. There can be up to 40 people from what I understand. There could be two groups of 20. We had one group of about 15 on our tour. But call. They'll send you some reminders. They sent me an email. They actually called me a day or two before to remind me of some things. Well, number one, you can't wear sandals on this trip. You have to have closed-toed shoes. They give you goggles to wear in certain areas. Disney's all about safety, especially, for the guests and for the employees, too. Everywhere we were, we had to wear goggles. The employees were wearing goggles as well. And I can't think of anything else, but
I had to keep our phones put away. We had to keep all cameras had to be put away at all times unless otherwise specified.
Right. There were only two places, maybe at the very end, if we want to say that's the third place. But there were only two places along the tour where we could take out our camera, and one of them was lunch. So,
wow.
Yeah, basically, you did not take your phone out for the entire day. So,
quick question was, did you need to buy a park ticket as well?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay.
But we were in the parks for a very short period of time. Most of the time we were not in the parks.
Okay. Behind the scenes. Yeah.
Yep. So we had to start. We met at 8:30 at Epcot. We met, you had to go through bag check and everything, but we met right outside of guest services at Epcot. And Mike, and do you want to share the interesting thing that we noticed about where we were in premium parking? Compared to premium parking?
Well, we had to get there at a certain time, and we had to get there early. And so we had to, get up early, leave early, arrive early. And because of that, we pretty much were parked in a spot that was equal to, if not better than, the $35 preferred parking area.
So it was three rows away from premium parking.
So the lesson here is that, who needs premium parking if you're an early bird?
You know? Yeah. Right. Wow.
That's true. So where you meet, there's actually a sign after you get through bag check and everything and you go over to guest relations. There's actually a sign that I never noticed before that says Epcot tours meet here. And yeah. And so the first thing that happened when we all gathered is they gave us lanyards with our names on them that said backstage tour. And they took our lunch orders. So we checked in and then they took orders for lunch, because later on the day we were told we were going to go to Whispering Canyon Cafe, which I don't know if that changes. It wasn't any information that I had read before, but right away I went, because Chris, have you ever eaten there before?
I have not.
Okay. So it's a very meat heavy.
Oh.
It's very much like barbecue.
Okay.
Lots of, just lots. They actually said there's a lot of meat. So if you had any dietary requests, which I did, of course, because I don't eat meat, that was the time that you had to let them know. I know somebody was allergic to strawberries. There was some other types of things, but that's where you had to let them know about that. And
how many people were on the tour?
So there were 15 on our tour, but they told us that sometimes they have up to 40 people, and then
really?
they break it into two different groups. And I believe, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, Janessa said that there are 5 full-time tour guides who do.
There weren't many. I don't know how many exact. I think I would like to say she said 4, but
4 or 5.
Yeah. 4 or 5, yeah.
Yeah, and this is a recent thing, because I've looked into this before, Chris, and mm-hmm. in the past, I think they only used to do it on Mondays, and you had to kind of, I would just miss it every time that I had been there in the summer. Right. So now they do it every day. So, okay.
All right.
Yeah. So then,
you meet there, and then you talk about lunch and food. And.
Yep. And then they had us actually take a picture, and we had, a little backstage magic sign, and they would use our phone to take a picture of us holding the sign with Spaceship Earth behind us, because they said that this is really the only time you could take a picture, so let's do it now. And they went over the rules, and so
Let's hear the rules.
No, the rules were basically that you had to wear the goggles. When they asked you to wear the goggles, you had to put your camera away. And you know what, there were things that were very, very cool that I would have liked to have taken pictures of. But it really is, the whole idea of Disney not wanting to ruin the magic for people. Mm-hmm. So I was very respectful and completely okay with that. How did you feel about it, Mike?
Yeah, I felt the same way you did.
Some other people didn't, though, huh?
Well.
Or you want to tell us as we get there?
Yeah, we'll mention it as we get along.
Okay. So basically, you're off to the right-hand side, correct?
Mm-hmm.
and you're getting ready to go. So you're still out on stage, quote unquote.
Right.
Okay. So then once they give you the breakdown of the rules, they say, "Let's go."
Yeah, and the cool thing is they actually don't tell you where you're going to go, and it does change from time to time. Mm-hmm. So even though we're going to tell you the places that we went, that doesn't guarantee that you will have the same tour that we had, because they add things and they take things away, and we'll talk about one of the things they added. But we got on the bus, and we weren't told where we were going, and the first, I kind of had an idea about the first place that we were going. Mike has actually been to this place before and got me very excited about it. So, Mike, do you want to describe our first stop? I think Chris is going to love this.
Oh, no.
So the bus took us out to look like we were leaving Epcot, but as you leave Epcot and as you head towards the Buena Vista Drive, if those of you who know, you take a certain right before you hit Buena Vista Drive, and that is the backstage area of Epcot. And one of the interesting trivia questions Janessa said is that how many of you have been backstage? Well, obviously, Michelle and I raised our hands. And
yeah, let me just say that we were like the Hermione Granger of the store. We were like, she'd ask a question,
hates.
And then there are two of us who had our hands up, and we're like, we better stop doing this.
Everybody hates you, teacher's pet.
So then she said, how many of you have been on Test Track? And the whole bus raised their hand. I don't know if the whole bus did, but most of those on the bus raised their hands. And she said, well, then you've been backstage. And she talked about how, and you know, Chris, you've run back there. The Test track goes backstage, but what you don't realize is that the way that the track is banked, there's no way that you can look off outside the car and see backstage because of the way that they banked the track. Well, anyways, we're moving
along.
They
have show cars in the middle.
Yes.
So we actually could see, we actually drove right by the track and we could see what people see. It was before the park was open, but we could see that people could just see these. If they do happen to glance, they can see these Formula race cars, but that's all.
Now,
but it's really kind of looks like a Sanford and Son back there.
So we were heading around the back end of World Showcase, and as we all know, the camera sees a certain view and everybody else sees the other view. For instance, when you are in Walt Disney World during Christmas, the front of the castle is decorated, but the back of the castle isn't because the camera doesn't see that. Well, when you go on this backstage magic tour, when you get to the back of Whispering Canyon, when you get to the back of World Showcase, you don't see pavilions, you see buildings. So they stopped at one building, and you could pretty much tell what building it was. It was the American Adventure Pavilion, and we had to put on our glasses, and we walked from the back. We came out where they have the character meet and greet, which is if you're looking at the building, it's to the left of the building. We came out there, and we gathered right near the top of the where the theater is, where all the performers, like for the Candlelight Processional is performed. And Janessa began to talk about Epcot. And Michelle and I were looking at each other, and I was waiting for Janessa to ask, well, anybody here know how Epcot was put together? But she didn't ask, but she began to talk about the story about how Marty Sklar and John Hench had two different models, and while there was a debate and argument going on, the two of them got together and they put their two models together, and bang, it came up with Epcot. They came up with Epcot, but she began to talk about the American Adventure and the history and a few other things in Epcot, and then she took us to a special spot. Michelle, would you like to tell?
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to say one of the things that I learned, and I did learn an awful lot. There were a lot of things that I knew, but I learned stuff too, was that originally, Chris, they had meant to put the American Adventure or the America Pavilion at the exact opposite side of the World Showcase Lagoon at the beginning of it. And it was going to be a big glass thing. And she talked about you know, Walt's idea of a weenie and pulling people the other side. So, so that was kind of interesting. I like the way she did this. We actually were kind of backstage at that point, even though we were right in front of American Adventure, because there were trucks driving around. There were, you know, people were doing, you know, like, you know, working on the shrubberies and, you know,
there,
like there was a pickup truck driving right in front of
it. Isn't it weird sacrilege? Though? Because I've done that before where you see like them out there with trucks and you, and it startles you because you don't expect to see vehicles moving in the middle of a theme park.
Oh, I feel really special because I get to see this stuff. Yeah. And everybody, I mean, they didn't pay any attention to us.
They're the dopey people again.
Yeah, they talked about one of the things she talked about was forced perspective, where the second and third story windows of Disney theme park buildings have windows that are a little bit smaller to give you the impression that they are higher up. And the American Adventure Pavilion was built with a certain objective in mind, and it was to show that it was bigger than life, because they wanted the pavilion to be seen from across World Showcase Lagoon. So the doors that we walk through to see the Voices of Liberty, those doors are actually 25 feet tall. And you don't realize it until you really take a look at someone standing there in front of the doors. You don't realize it when you're walking through. So there's a few other things talked about, how the architecture was put together. And I think she could have talked a little bit more, but she was really anxious to take us to a special area to show us something. So what we did is we walked around the right side. Michelle, why don't you take it from here?
Sure. So one of the things she talked about was that Walt and Roy Disney always wanted to save things for the show, meaning that they didn't spend any extra additional money on things that the guests wouldn't see. So as soon as you get to the back of the America Pavilion, it really just looks like a kind of a big warehouse. And so we got to go in the back door. We kind of walked down the side, and it went down. We went down a whole nother level. We walked in the back door, put our glasses on, and we got to see the workings of the American Adventure. One of the things,
the show itself, so right? Cool.
The show itself. So it actually was running. So we found out that they actually run it twice before any guest sees it, at the beginning of the day. Sometimes cast members, sometimes, you know, engineers are there watching it. They were playing it. And so when we walked in, it was the part with Susan B. Anthony.
Right.
And one of the things that we learned is that the projection is actually coming from behind
the screen.
Yeah. Huh. And the animatronics are on these, it's kind of like modules that just kind of, they're three of them that go all the way across, and they kind of just go underneath the audience, but they go back after everything, you know, after something is shown. So Mark Twain and Ben Franklin go up, they kind of slide into place, they go up, and then they go down, and then that whole train kind of goes back. And it's these square sort of modules that kind of just hook into place. And
so it's like, what's the game?
Tetris. It was like Tetris.
Yeah,
that's what it looked like. It was like this amazing Tetris thing. And so as they were kind of moving back during the show, we could see Mark Twain at the scene with Mark Twain and Benjamin Franklin, kind of in front of they're in front of like a little fire or something, or a little stove that was right next to me. It was so cool. So she had her flashlight, and she was showing how the back of the animatronics have, you know, they're kind of Velcroed, and they check even with every show at the beginning of the day, they're checking the to see if their costumes look okay. They're checking to make sure that the animatronic works well. Right. It's a very small space back there. I was standing in the back, and I kind of felt like, oh, I wish you'd allow some other people to go up in front. But I just waited patiently, and they kept on sliding back towards me. So that was kind of cool. Then there's a little demonstration of how the animatronic head is put together, and they had a model there of one of the animatronic heads. Oh, wow. To kind of show you, get to feel what it feels like. And then I asked her, people didn't have a lot of questions. Again, we were like the Hermione Grangers, but I asked her about the Frederick Douglass float, because I just think that that's so cool the way that that's done.
Right.
And she said, oh my gosh, you asked at the perfect time. So she brought me over. She brought all of us over kind of to the left, facing the audience, and Frederick Douglass was kind of going back into place. So he comes out from the side, and we were talking about how that's one of the things that they look for, is the marriage between what's going on with the animatronics and what's going on with that projection system. Cause I'm sure I don't have to tell you, Chris, that the screen, it makes Frederick Douglass look like he's going forward. And then it makes it look like he's going backwards.
Right.
So he actually comes in from the side. So there are also animatronics that they're sliding up back and forth, and then they're also coming in from the side. So it's amazing economy of space that so much is going on. I would say for that alone, it was worth the day for me, because I just thought that was great.
Oh. How long did you guys stay there throughout the whole presentation? Like, they let you just hang out there? And
they from the time of Susan B. Anthony until the end, we were pretty much there talking. Mike?
Yeah.
Did I miss any?
No, I think it's really one of the things that I wish we had gotten there early, because of the time of the morning we were there. They were going through one of the two test runs, so the theater had to be dark. They had cast members in the audience watching and making sure everything worked well, and because of that, you know, we're in the dark, and Janessa had to use a flashlight to show stuff. We're, if you can think of it, we're underneath the audience. Sometimes we're underneath where the audience sits, and sometimes we're underneath where I shouldn't say that. Sometimes the audio animatronics are underneath the audience. Sometimes they are behind the screen, and that's where most of it was. And when I had been in there before, I had been there at around 7 o'clock in the morning or 7:30 in the morning, and all the lights were on, so I could see all the audio animatronics, and I could see all the hydraulics and all the how they slide. You think about it. You think about George Washington. You think about Benjamin Franklin, and who's writing?
Mark Twain.
Well, yeah, that would be one.
Thomas Jefferson.
Thomas Jefferson, either one. Think of them as like being a one unit, and they slide. They go left, right, up, down, north, south, and you know, and it's just like a Rubik's Cube or whatever. Or what did you describe
it? We call it
Tetris.
Like a Tetris game. And you know, there are some little things, for instance, that when you see Mark Twain and Benjamin Franklin at the beginning of the show, their voices are coming from the speaker, which is in the stove.
It looks like the stove. Yeah, they said that they try to put things in the scene that, you know, you wouldn't notice, but that's actually, those are speakers, and it makes it sound like the animatronics are talking.
Oh, wow.
But Mike, didn't they say the whole thing pretty much runs on like a DOS system? It's really old.
Oh yeah, it's got to be, right? When they installed it back in the 80s, right?
So right.
Pretty old, and I don't know when they'll change it. The one thing that I wanted to say before we left this part of the tour is that we were told that they are pretty accurate. I mean, up to the voices, to the dress, you know, the everything is as accurate as could be historically, except there is one inaccuracy in the entire show. Do you want to guess what that is, Chris?
None of them are alive.
You mean Benjamin Franklin and Mark Twain didn't live at the same time?
Well, yeah, I guess that's two. When they show the family having their photograph taken by Matthew Brady, the inaccuracy there is that the phosphorus that he uses to take the photo wasn't invented at that time.
Well, phosphorus was invented, but
it wasn't used. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So that's
You learned that part.
We did learn that part.
That was something new. So yeah. Hermione didn't get that one right in class.
So that was the first stop. And
now, what time of the morning is this at this point now?
It's so about, this is 9:30 maybe.
9:30. Okay.
Maybe 9:15.
9:15.
9:30. So they're not opening until 11 o'clock anyway back there. So
right. So that was probably the first of the two test shows that they do in the morning.
Right. Okay. Did you see Mike? We were like in complete darkness, and there was a guy. Did you see him? He was sitting in kind of behind where the guide was.
Yep.
Talking. He was kind of just sitting in the dark by himself.
Yeah. Well, he didn't want to be.
Yeah,
he
wants,
sure. Yeah, so
sometimes they're the best way to be.
Yes, it is.
Sitting quietly in the dark.
But before we leave the American Adventure part of the tour, Michelle, I think we should mention that even though we had gone through baggage check at Epcot to get to the meeting place for the tour,
on the bus,
we had to be checked again. Actually, we were checked.
And we got backstage.
Yeah, we got checked twice. On the bus.
I'm making sure you didn't take any souvenirs.
Yeah, so.
Well, they didn't. It was sort of a cursory check. I don't know that it was.
You think you're taking something?
I don't know. We honestly just got from Epcot to on the bus to then they were checking us again. I don't know what we could have taken, a water bottle maybe.
My thought always was like, do you go and ruin the magic for yourself, or does it make it more interesting when you're back in the parks normally?
So after a few days after we did the tour, I went back and Mike, were you with me?
Well, yeah.
I can't remember if you were with me to American Adventure.
Yeah, we were there.
Yeah. So to look at it again was really cool because I could imagine
what was going on.
It just made it so much more cool to kind of visualize what was happening backstage.
Right.
To have them, the way that they kind of appear and then disappear. And then you don't, like, I'm listening. Do you hear it? Because you can hear it down underneath. You can hear them kind of sliding in and sliding out. But you can't hear a thing when you're in the audience. It's just seamless. So it kind of made it more cool for me that I kind of had a kind of a visual of what was happening with Frederick Douglass and, you know, how that float was kind of going off to the side. So.
But even just like going backstage and seeing everything look like a glorified warehouse, that doesn't make you feel like, oh, like when you walk through the parks, you look at American Adventure, you kind of in your head, even though you probably know it's not true, think that it goes on in the back and it continues around the back and it looks like a big giant colonial home. And now you go back there and it looks like, you know, Secaucus, New Jersey. And you just go, hmm. Yeah. But so do you kind of feel
it's
that
a big building. It's
yeah,
a big building.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I hear what you're saying. We actually don't go behind too many other attractions. So I think that was that the only attraction?
That was
the only attraction that we went behind. Okay. Oh, most of it was like, you know, where they make the costumes, how they do the laundry, where they do the ride vehicles, stuff like that.
Okay, so it's not like you're not going behind every ride in the park.
No. I mean, I have been on Keys to the Kingdom where they do more of that in the Magic Kingdom, but that was the only one. It didn't really, because you know what? I might kind of think about those buildings, but having gone to Epcot several days after that, I didn't even think of it the way that any differently than the way I always looked at Epcot. But it did kind of make it kind of cool that I'm like, oh, I know what's going on down there.
Oh, so you're like, you've got the secret, you know, that nobody else has. You know something a little bit more than everybody else knows.
It put a little spin on it that I didn't have before, and I liked it.
It's funny because years ago, I had read about how it's all done, but I had never seen it. I saw it a few years ago, and I saw it again, you know, last week, and it really didn't change anything for me. It just, I always considered the American Adventure my favorite attraction. I don't know if it still is. I mean, I think Cars Land, Radiator Springs, I think is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I just think that the American Adventure makes use of a lot of technology, and they really tell a really interesting story, and the way that that thing is put together, and it's probably one of the most complicated pieces of machinery, you know, in the whole resort. I just think it's just amazing, but it didn't change the attraction for me. It just, it made me, I would say it probably made me appreciate it even more. So, yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, that it kind of brings in the question, how young these kids can go see it, and does it mess them up? Like, you know, like I, when my kids were little, I wanted them to believe the Disney magic, and now, like, you know, if they go behind the scenes, do they sort of go, it's just this thing? So is there an age, like, you know, you sort of, like you're saying, you should be 18, but these younger kids, are they going to get sort of like disillusioned by the whole thing if you take your kids too young?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
I think that's why they say tweens. But I don't, right. I don't know that I would take my kid as a tween. You know, right. When I volunteer to give kids the worlds, I saw Mickey and I saw the other characters. I didn't see anything else that would disturb me. I think that, you know, for all of us, I don't want to speak for you guys, but I think that we would agree that the technology is one of the things that makes Disney very interesting to me and keeps me coming back. Mm-hmm. So I think it just made me respect it more to see what goes on in such a cool attraction that I really, really like. And I would never have dreamed it was as intricate and as well-timed as it is. And she talks about how the person who designed Benjamin Franklin, what did he say, Mike? What did she say about that person walked around for 3 weeks using a cane?
Oh, yeah. The Imagineer had to figure out how to simulate.
To animate. Yeah. Yeah, animate the person walking around with a cane.
So he walked around, and then when he would design the auto animatronic, I think it was the audio animatronic broke the cane, and he had to figure out how to make it look like. So when he's walking towards the Thomas Jefferson. Yeah. He's walking up the stairs and he's walking towards him. And basically, he's just, his figure is just moving forward and his leg is going up and down like it's walking. I mean, it looks okay. I wouldn't say it looks realistic, but it does give you the illusion that he's moving towards him. But there's a lot of,
but that made me look at it. Yeah. I looked at it as I was watching the show and I thought, wow, that person, you know, really studied the way that somebody walks with a cane, and you know, it just made me respect the whole experience a little bit more. So.
And the Will Rogers voice is performed by Will Rogers Jr.
Wow.
They thought about having a third host for the 20th century, but they could not come up with someone who was, how do we put it? Apolitical, I guess, is a way of putting it.
Who could make everybody happy.
Yeah, and maybe it should have been Walt Disney himself. But so they decided, well, we're not going to have anyone, and they just continued with Mark Twain and Benjamin Franklin.
Hmm. Interesting. So you learned a few new things.
Yeah, and we'll learn more.
That's just the first stop.
First stop, and we don't know how many episodes this may be. This may be two, this may be three, but we want to make sure that we really report on what this tour was all about. And we're talking six hours, so we've got a ways to go. So for Chris Aliopoulos, it's getting late. It's getting late. For Chris Aliopoulos and for Michelle Scriven-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you on the road in the parks in part two of Backstage Magic.
The Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More Podcast. If you would like to support the podcast, please go to mickeymiles.podbean.com and click the green Become a Patron button in the upper right-hand corner of the menu bar. We thank you for your support. Don't forget, our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/mickeymilespodcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/mickeymilespod. Last of all, don't forget, if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@mickeymilespodcast.com, and we'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.